Welcome to Red Ice Radio, new or regular listeners. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. I'm glad you stopped by redicecreations.com and decided to join us as we explore some of the most interesting and fascinating areas of research. We are coming to you from Gothenburg, Sweden, up in Scandinavia, but you can, of course, follow us worldwide over the internet through our website. If you're new to the program, please take a look in our radio archive and webcast archive. We have over 1 year of radio available for free for you there. Interviews with interesting people doing important research into many different subject matters. Nothing is off limits, as we are prepared to go anywhere as we search for answers. You can help spreading the word about the radio program, and you can also sign up for a membership to our website and get full access to our radio archive going back to 2006. We have webcasts, films, video interviews, and much more available for you there as well. It's well worth it. All information on how you can join us is available on redicecreations.com. And today we have Anthony and Derek from We Are Change Ireland with us today. We had them with us about a year ago now, or about around the time when the first Lisbon Treaty vote took place. And just like we said back then, if it's a no vote, they're probably are going to relaunch this in a second referendum. And yes, here we are again, faced with another Irish vote. And this is the last show in our kind of EU series that we'll be doing before we go over to Dublin on the 1st, 2nd and 3rd of October. We urge you to join us, of course, wherever you're from, but definitely if you are from Europe and if your country has denied you a vote on the treaty as well. We're going to cover the vote in our way, and we'll be able to bring you some video material of that later on as well. Their website is wiseupjournal.com. They are behind the film End of Nations. Please go there, take a look, and inform yourself. Anthony and Derek, welcome to Red Ice Radio. Great to have both of you back on the show again.
Oh, Henrik, yeah, it's a pleasure to be on.
It's good to be on the air, Henrik.
Guys, tell us a little bit how you are preparing for the second vote here. We're about 3 weeks away from when we're doing this recording. How are you gearing up, and is there any difference this time around compared to the first vote, guys?
Well, I think this year compared to last year, there's more, say, groups with websites who cover the bigger issue, and they got together. So, and they're going in with the sovereign independence, and we're not part of that, but we're in full support of them. And those other main groups that we kind of help out, so we basically help out any solid no groups, you know, putting up posters, handing out leaflets, going to meetings and things like that.
Yeah, the Sovereign Independent is a newspaper, and there's these guys, they got over 300,000 copies of it made, and that's what we want there. Readers to fully support them, this Sovereign Independent. So we sent out mailing lists saying that go towards them and help them out rather than ourselves. And we've just a big video we've released today. I was up all last night editing it, and it's going to have a major impact on the SI. It's going to do a lot of damage. It's Jim Corr from the Irish Music Fan, The Corrs.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I heard about that. He was very outspoken about the Lisbon Treaty, right?
Yeah, yeah, he's very outspoken about it. But we got together and we put a video about all the different issues on the Lisbon Treaty and some shocking things that didn't come out last time that people don't know. And it's going to affect everybody around the EU. That's been released today. That's been released this morning. And it's going to go huge because Jim was also out today flying planes around Dublin with banners on the back of it telling people to vote no.
Oh, really?
And it was all over the radio. People were talking, what's this plane flying around Dublin with Jim Corr? And then they were asking people, sending text messages to track the plane. That went huge today.
That's brilliant. So he's, he's in the group, I think they're called The Corrs. Are they as big in Ireland? I guess they're bigger there than they are internationally, right?
Oh yeah, they're huge in Ireland, and they're huge internationally as well. And European bands, they find it hard to break into America, but of course they broke into America. And when I was on holiday in the Philippines, everybody knew The Corrs in the Philippines. So it's a big band.
Nice. And what does Jim primarily focus on? Is there anything specific that he's been trying to get the word out on, certain issues in regards to the Lisbon Treaty that he's advocating, or not advocating, rather?
Yeah, well, he brings up that it's a totally new union, a totally new democratic union, and it says that in the treaties. Because the Lisbon Treaty is a bunch of treaties put together that's amended. And he talks about death penalty. There is a death penalty being introduced through the Lisbon Treaty, because it's in the Charter of Human Rights, which is makes it legally binding, Charter of Human Rights, and then the Charter of Fundamental Rights also. Both of those are made legally binding under the Lisbon Treaty, Article Number 6. And that allows the death penalty in the EU during times of war. Now, the interesting thing is that all the member states are signed up to not having the death penalty, whereas nobody will be condemned to the death penalty. But after the Lisbon Treaty, the EU will be a separate state, totally separate state, and have a legal personality, which is Article 47, if anybody wants to look it up. Article 47, the EU of the Lisbon Treaty, said that the EU will be given legal personality. They'd be totally separate, and they are signed up to the death penalty, which is a huge, huge revelation that it will be separate, and it is signed up to the death penalty.
And if I remember correctly, they have different kind of guidelines to when or in what kind of situations this is supposed to be implemented. If I remember correctly, they even wrote about like civil unrest, and if you're rioting and things like that, you can be tried under or rather get the penalty of death. Isn't that right?
Well, I think it was more in that regard. If a cop or a police killed someone during a riot or an insurrection, that they would not class that action as being unlawful. But I don't think it specifically mentioned the death penalty except for the Article 2 Protocol Number 6 in the Charter of Fundamental Rights, where it says in a time of war or imminent threat of war, it can be brought in. But I think the part with rioting is only if a cop or police kills someone during what they call a riot or insurrection, their actions would not be held as being unlawful.
Okay.
And if you look at the G20 protest, if you go back a few months ago and the person was killed by the cops, first they said he had a heart attack, and then when the public copped on that the cops hit him, they changed their tune. And now with the, I think it was a climate protest, they're trying to say that all the British police are going to be, rather than aggressive to the protesters, trying to help the protesters. So that article would cover things like any protest really in the future.
Well, that seems to be standard practice at the moment, actually, with the new laws, the new totalitarian laws that are in. But the one thing that is not status quo is the death penalty. And that's the big thing that you should focus on rather than the riots, is the death penalty will be introduced by the EU itself.
Yes. And you guys mentioned, of course, again, Truth Coalition Ireland and the Sovereign Independent. We had, as you might know, Simon Murphy and Paul Flynn with us not too long ago talking about this issue as well. Are you guys helping them in any way to distribute papers, or are you in any other way kind of cooperating with those guys as well?
The day just before this interview, I was out in the CE Centre, and I had no leaflets and the Sovereign Independent papers, and there was about five or six of us, and we're at the tram station, and we're there for about 2 hours just handing out the different leaflets from the different law groups and the Sovereign Independent. And towards, say, maybe an hour in, a few from the Yes side came, but as I said, there was a lot more people taking our material from the papers and the leaflets compared to the Yes side people that were there.
There you go. And how is the general, if you can talk something about the response that you get? Are you in a situation where you can talk with some of the people who bother to take a copy of the paper? Are they interested, or is it more like they shun it and it's like, no, whatever? Or how's the mentality right now over there?
Well, we're taken back at the impact it's having. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I think because it's in paper form, and it's so well written as well, there's no speculation in that at all, that people are looking at it, and it's like they're viewing it the same as the mainstream media. And if it's in print, it must be true. But everything in it is true, unlike the mainstream media. But it's amazing. Dave, who you had on the show last year, he was going around with the taxi drivers, giving all the paper, all the taxi drivers. And there was people coming up to him saying, is it true that they're creating a new world order, and the EU has set up to do that, and they're taking away our sovereignty. And he, you know, and that the bankers are robbing us, and we have a guarantee of 420 billion given out to the bankers, and they're in control of this. People are going up to him and saying all this to him, and they never heard this before. And people in barbers are talking about it. One of the guys is getting his haircut in the barbers, and they were just chatting about the New World Order, which I never did before. And people were knocking on my door, handing out flyers. And I said, here's a few papers. And this old man next to him, about 8 years of age, said, oh yeah, I read that paper. That's a brilliant paper. Because there's 300,000 copies of it, you know, in a country that's it's only 4 million people. And it's all over. It's all in every county in Ireland.
Yes.
There's people with thousands of copies given out everywhere. Cork, the whole county Cork is saturated with it.
They're not giving
that paper out in Cork anymore. It's saturated.
And I mean that's brilliant in that way, and I guess that the guys are planning to release even more papers as donations are coming in. If I'm correct, they're planning to keep the paper coming, so to speak, all the way up to the vote. Is that right? Have you talked with them about that as well?
Yeah, like initially it was going to be 50,000 papers printed, and then, you know, 100,000 and 200,000. We got 200. The guys got 200,000, and then another 100,000 was printed. So yeah, I think it works at about 7 cents a paper now because there's so much bulk, I was told. But yeah, every single penny, like they said on air, is going to be used for the paper. Yeah.
Brilliant. And maybe we can just talk generally here about you guys' view here, so to speak, in terms of why the Irish again should vote no to the Lisbon Treaty. What are some of the main things that you've been focusing on and that you think that people should be aware of, which might not at this point know so much about the treaty and what it will mean if it's indeed implemented for the Irish?
Well, even the day when I was counseling people, a person stopped me and asked, could I give her some simple points on the treaty, like you just said in the question. And I focused on two points that people really don't know is, and the first one is, under this Lisbon Treaty, for the first time ever, the EU will have its own legal personality outside of the member states, and they can act on their own accord in any area where they'll have power or competency transferred by the treaty. And that means the ability to conclude international agreements, which member states will then be bound by. And I think that's a major thing that people, whether it's a yes or no, haven't focused on too much. That, like, literally you're creating a new legal personality that can act and sign international agreements on such areas as our monetary policy in the EU zone and immigration policy under Article 79. And the other major point about the treaty is, for the first time ever, we'll become real EU citizens, additional to national citizenship. And that means you have responsibility and you have to be loyal to this new union that will become, either whether you like it or not, you'll have to have loyalty as a citizen to it.
What could that mean for people more if we think about in terms of applying that? Could that mean, if they decide to do a mandatory military recruitment or some kind of draft or something similar, could this be things that we could be facing down the road eventually?
Well, Henrik, the reason why in the previous treaty they put in that we are notional citizens, and notional means imaginary. So the reason they did that was so people, the media and the governments could use the term EU citizens, even though it means nothing. You know, they just wanted them to get using it to get us familiar with the idea that we are EU citizens. So when it really does come along, really legally binding, we don't notice it. And there is going to be big implications, because Article 42.3 TEU of the Lisbon Treaty says that the states will have to make civilian and military capabilities available to the Union.
Yes.
So civilian and military capabilities are going to have to be made available to the Union. And also if there's wars as well, we have to defend each other. So if one side is attacked, we're going to have to, all member states have to defend each other. And again, Article 42.3 says that all member states have to improve their military. So that's all member states are committed to improving their military capabilities. So, you know, at the moment, Ireland will maintain the status quo, you know, if the Lisbon Treaty gets through, but Ireland is in Chad now with the French military, working underneath the French military in the former French colony. So, you know, that's not any good. That's not really neutral.
Right.
So we will have to expand that. Yeah, and like I said, if there is an attack, that where all member states will have to come together and defend each other, and then the death penalty for the union itself, only the union can impose that. So
yeah,
you know, who are they going to commit to? Who are they going to send the death penalty? You know, it's going to be the EU citizens. That's who it has authority over.
I mean, they've, for instance, here up in Sweden, we have already, like, the passport is EU based. Obviously, I guess you have the same over there, but otherwise, beyond that, you think that there's more things that could be changing, you know, in terms of, let's say, our identity cards or a driver's license, that is going to be more with a EU tag instead of the national tags, things like that?
Yeah, well, it says in the referendum bill that Ireland will be adding into the constitution, it says that all EU laws will be superior than local laws, local national laws, and in areas of conflict, which means that every single EU law made is going to override Irish laws, and then we're going to have to obey them. And it says in Article 1 of the Lisbon Treaty, right, it says that the European Union will be created and it will replace and succeed European communities, right? So at the moment, it's actually legally a European community, it's a community of states, but it's called the European Union, right?
Yes.
Just called that. But this Lisbon Treaty creates a brand new union, and it says in Article 1 that it creates the European Union, which will replace and succeed the community. So it dissolves the communities. And it also says that it will be called, the new name of the European Union will be called the Union. So if this goes past, where you'll be reading in the media and be getting pamphlets from government, it won't say the European Union, it will say their union, be members of their union.
Yes.
So it's their single union, and it's part of the New World Order, because, and it's in the Lisbon Treaty, Article 21.2H, if anybody wants to look it up, it says that it commits the EU to promoting the international system and, quote, global governance.
Oh, really now?
Yeah, global governance is in the Lisbon Treaty.
Oh,
that's
God.
The exact term.
Look at that. And what do you guys think, if there is another no vote here now in Ireland, then do you think that they in some way will try to bypass Ireland, meaning that you guys will have, how should we put it, a specific kind of, they will try to circumvent this in some way, meaning that, okay, we will have a different set of rules for Ireland then, but all the rest of the countries will implement the Lisbon Treaty because our national governments have signed it. So do you think that it could be a kind of a schism there where Ireland just kind of ends up on the outside, or do they have to, for whatever reason, have all the countries in there? What do you guys think about that?
I think they might try and use a scare tactic, and they mentioned that after the no vote last year, but legally they can't do anything under the terms of the Nice Treaty, which every member state is bound by, including Ireland. They cannot do anything like kick us out or join a new kind of, make one set of rules for themselves and say, well, Ireland doesn't have to obey it legally. Under the Nice Treaty, you know, the rules of the European Union have to be for every member state. And if there's a new treaty or amendment at the moment, every single member state has to ratify that in their own, in terms of their own constitutional requirements, their own laws. So most have tried to push the Lisbon Treaty through the Parliament, except Ireland, because of our constitutional protection of where any time they alter the constitution, it has to be put to the vote by the people for a referendum. So they might try and use that scare tactic, but it is all smokes and mirrors at the end of the day, because it cannot legally be done.
So your government cannot bypass the people in this question. They will not try to find a way around this, whether say, you know, for whatever reason, we're not going to have a referendum, and we as a government are going to sign the treaty anyway. You're saying that legally they cannot do that.
Well, considering we had in 1986 the Raymond Grotty case, and it went to the Supreme Court, and that ruled that the government have to put, you know, if something significantly changes the laws of the country, it has to be put to the people for referendum. Under the Irish Constitution, it says the decision of the Supreme Court is conclusive and final. So So the Irish government did try and do that. They became in an open act of treason, and they could be prosecuted for doing so because the Supreme Court has already ruled on this matter regarding EU treaties. The problem would be if the people vote yes under Article 48, would that make the self-amending? We would have voted that we accept that the EU can change future treaties as they please.
Yes.
But at the moment, and if the people vote no under the constitutional laws of Ireland and under the EU laws of the Nice, Amsterdam, Maastricht treaties and all that, they could not legally implement the Lisbon Treaty if we vote no.
Mm.
They might, maybe, if they vote no again, they'll do what they've done in France and Holland, wait 3 years, rejig a few words and try and pretend that's a new treaty, but legally they can't implement it without the vote of the people.
Hmm. Okay, well, we'll see what they do if they again, in legal terms or with wording or whatever, can circumvent this issue in some way. I'd reckon that that's what they're going to try to do if we get another no in Ireland. And what's your you guys' consensus, so to speak, right now? Do you feel that it's leaning towards the no? The latest polls show that the support for the Lisbon Treaty is dropping in Ireland. Can you guys say something about that?
Well, I think my take on it is, especially in from Camden and around City Centre, it's a good no. There is yes, you hear people yes, but I hear a lot of no's. And the thing I find is when you talk, last year you could talk to a person who would vote yes, they're more than happy to talk to you and give you their reasons. This year they're more kind of closed-minded, they just say their yes, walk off. But the no people, generally, they want more information, and they're more than happy. And when you give them information, they know they're grateful for you. And they seem to be thinking for themselves. I generally think from my feedback on the street that there is strong no, and the media is not covering this because we, at this stage it's clear that the media is in bed with the government on some account. Because if you just watch mainstream media for the last year or read the papers, it was all how dare the Irish vote no, and they should talk about the impact that we'll have on the international stage. But the fact is, if you talk to people on the street, they are strong no against them. Most of them said, I already voted no, and I'm going to vote no again.
Yes. So how is the information about it right now? Are you guys getting any information, let's say, through the mail? Or, I mean, media is one thing, and I understand that the yes propaganda is working there right now, but otherwise, are you getting a balanced view, is it totally just, you know, vote yes or else, or what is it like?
Yeah, everywhere you look, it's vote yes. All the posters on every poll, it's vote yes, yes, everywhere. Today, you can only look up in the sky to see a vote no. Jim Corr is playing.
There you go. Does he plan, do you guys know if he plans to do something else or continue with the flyovers of the plane up until the vote?
Well, I'll have to talk to him about that, but I'm sure he'll think of something, be creative and think of something else. There is another group, Corr, and they have fantastic posters everywhere.
Nice.
As well.
Nice.
But Catherine Day, she's Irish and she's the top female in the European Union. She's the Secretary General of the European Commission. The other day she came out and she says that the Lisbon Treaty will give the EU power to, quote, speak with one voice in helping to shape the new world order.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, and see, it wasn't a new world order, it's the new world order. You know, they have a specific image of what that's going to be.
Yes. Do you have a lot of Irish politicians that hang out, for example, at the Bilderberg meeting? I know that the Swedish mouths, so to speak, that are handling the presidency right now, like Reinfeldt, our prime minister. We have Anders Borg, our finance minister, and another lady, of course, Margot Wallström. They have all been invited to the Bilderberg meetings. Is it the same over with your politicians in Ireland right now, as you know?
Well, I think it wouldn't really be. I know Peter Sutherland was the major Irish person who was a big Bilderberg attendee. He used to be in Fine Gael, the so-called opposition party in government, and he was the former Attorney General. I know, I think Charlie McCreevy was, his name was down the list in 2008. But the main thing is our current Attorney General, supposed to be the highest legal expert in the whole nation of Ireland. He attended the Bilderberg meeting in 2008. And so he's basically, when the government make new laws, he's the one that clarifies that they're in line with the Constitution. But you have him going over to the 120, 130 people attending the Bilderberg meeting and setting the agenda. So
when you have politicians like we have, and globally everybody's in the same boat, you don't need Bilderberg, because like our politicians, the vast majority of them voted to give the banks $420 billion bailout, which for a country of 4 million people, it's going to sink the country, because normally we pay $2 billion a year to pay back our debt.
Yes.
So to pay back $420 billion, you know, it's going to take 210 years. So they're committing the labor of the country to 210 years. And that's yeah. Labor, you know, you're going to have to work for that so you can pay those taxes. Maybe give it to the bankers. So people are going to be working for the bankers, not the other way around.
Yeah,
we'd
exactly.
Be working and giving money to them. So, you know, that's the majority of the politicians voted that way. So, you know, you don't need them to go to Bilderberg.
I see what you mean. And speaking of the economy, when we had Marta Andreasen with us here just a couple of days ago, she's the former, again, for people who don't know, the former chief accountant to the EU. She obviously was suspended from her job. She's now an MEP under UKIP, the UK Independent Party. And she mentioned, among other things, about some of the more favorable tax laws for a lot of Irish corporations and so forth, and that potentially is going to be taken away, so to speak. How do you guys see, economically speaking, changes taking place in Ireland if there is a no vote, or rather a yes vote? Will this make things more difficult for you, economically speaking?
Yeah, of course it would, because we have a lower corporate tax rate than all the other European countries. But with the Lisbon Treaty, the self-amending article, they could, at the moment, like with the taxation, if they want to change that, Ireland would have a veto on that. But the trick that they can do is that they can have a vote to say, okay, let's put taxation into qualified majority. And they can vote, okay, let's put taxation in qualified majority. And then in qualified majority, then they could bring in the harsh law proposals, and Ireland could vote no against that. And then you lose the veto. So that's how they can make the Lisbon Treaty really self-amending. First, they'll vote to bring it into a different way of voting where you lose all your veto. Then just the majority of them could vote yes and bring it in.
Hmm.
And they could do that with all the articles of the Lisbon Treaty. They could do that with all of them.
There you go. And, go ahead.
I was just going to add, under the Lisbon Treaty, they will be able to amend the existing treaty to give the EU exclusive power as regards rules on, you know, foreign direct investment. So a big part of Ireland, especially in the 90s and the so-called Celtic Tiger, was attracting like big American and multinational companies over here. And we're one of the best nations in Europe for attracting that. But under this treaty, the EU will have exclusive powers on foreign direct investment. So if Germany or France is not happy with our policy on tax, which is 12.5% at the moment, they're to somewhere like 25-26%.
Major increase.
And I'd also add that the Lisbon Treaty was written in a time going back 9 years ago, when the governments of Ivy Nation was encouraging the deregulation and massive takeout credit, development. So the treaty is based on all the economics, which all the politicians say caused the economic crash now.
Ah, yeah, I see what you mean. Oh my God, so it's totally outdated in that sense, that they haven't even changed things accordingly to how the economic situation have changed. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, so they're basically contradicting themselves or just being a hypocrite when they say we need this treaty, when the treaty was drawn up and written during a time when they're encouraging everything that they now admit caused the global economic crash.
Sheesh, how about that? And, you know, if we talk about some of the things of what you guys will be doing during the vote, then what can you share with us about that? And if there's anything, what do you encourage the rest of the European audience that might be tuning in here today do suggest people to head on over to Ireland, as we're going to do, to show their face, talk with some of the people, wave some placards or whatever they feel that they want to do to help encourage a no vote? Or is there anything else that you'd recommend for the European audience to do here?
Yeah, I was talking to the guys at the Sovereign Independent, and they're thinking of getting large screen TVs and putting them into the middle of the main shopping area and playing videos of different individuals from European countries saying why they want to vote no, and thank you, Ireland, for voting no last time. So if there's any people out there who knows how to use a video and upload to YouTube, it'd be great if you could say a few words why you want Ireland to vote no and why we were grateful last time, upload it, and you can email it into wiseupjournal.com, or you can email it up into the Sovereign Independent.
Oh, that's a brilliant idea, actually. Yeah, so you just people, you, basically what you're saying is use your webcam or whatever else and say a few words about what you think about it or why Ireland should vote no, and you can we can send that video to you via YouTube or directly to Wise Up Journal, correct?
Yeah, you upload it to YouTube and then send the link to Wise Up Journal.
Really?
Or the Sovereign Independent, and then the guys will try and get that onto a DVD, and they'll play it in the middle of the main shopping area a week before the referendum. And we'll probably also play Jim Corr's new video today as well.
Yes, and is this primarily going to be in Dublin, or do you know if they plan to do it in other cities as well?
Well, this idea would be primarily in Dublin, because the majority of the population is in Dublin, and this is where the big swing would come in. Would be in Dublin.
Yes.
But other parts of the country are saturated with leaflets and stickers and newspapers.
And will you guys be around the Dublin area as well, or will you kind of spread out, I guess? I don't know how many people you are in total in regards to who are associated with We Are Change, but or do you plan to spread out, or will you be more like in one area?
Well, people are just working together on this from every single group. They're all just working together. And there's people coming in who never were in any group before. There's people all over the country, different counties, and anybody in Dublin is encouraged to stay in Dublin, because this is where the majority of the population is. This is where the real hard counseling has to be happening, and the rest of the country is taken care of.
Is there anyone else that you know about that is speaking out against the treaty, either they being, I guess, more celebrity-type people or politicians?
Well, the biggest trade union in Ireland, the Technical Engineers and Electricians Union, they're the biggest trade union in Ireland. They're coming out and they're advocating a no, because of something massive. It's just going to have a huge impact on all of Europe. These have 45,000 members. And it has to do with your country. This is where it started, in your country, in Sweden, with the Laval judgment, then another one in the Rutherford case in Germany. And this is going to have massive implications on every person in the EU. And Derek's an expert.
Yeah, I researched especially the Laval case last year, and the Rutherford case, the two of them kind of tie into each other, and it paints a picture of what the new EU will look like under Lisbon for workers and trade unions. Uh-huh. And if I start with the Laval case, effectively, going back a few years in Sweden, there was a Latvian company that set up there, and they brought over posted workers from Latvia,
yes,
which were paying them the Latvian collective agreement.
That's right.
The two biggest, I think, trade unions in Sweden, blockaded this practice and protested against it. And they clearly stated that they have no problem with foreign workers coming over, but they have a problem when the foreign workers are also being exploited and it damages their standard of living also. So
yes,
it's like a double barrel. You're hitting the foreign workers coming over, but you're also hitting the national workers who are living in that nation.
Yes.
And the EU Court of Justice ruled that the company had a right no, the company's right outweigh the protesters' right to obstruct them. So basically, Ulf Benitez at the time, who was the professor of law at Stockholm University, said, effectively, this outlaw striking against this practice or obstructing people carrying out this practice. And then in April 2008, you have the Rufford case, where in it deals with Germany. In Lower Saxony, they had a pay agreement for their workers. And one of the foreign companies who brought posted workers over were paying them 46.7% less than the collective agreement.
Oh.
That was for the German workers. And the EU Court of Justice ruled that the practice is okay under the free services and products, articles of previous treaties and the Nice Treaty.
Jeez.
So basically, if you take them two cases together, it outlaws striking against this what should be a legal practice, and then it legitimizes it at the same time with the Rufford case. So at first what would happen is posted workers would come over, and not only Irish people, but settled immigrants who have been living here for years would feel the effects of not being able to get a job unless you're willing to accept less than what you usually get.
Yeah, exactly.
And it'll go, it's not just like building, or it's all job sectors, basically, this would. So if you're a manager even, they could bring over posted managers from where they have much less than like Latvia or Poland. And then Irish people have to compete with them with wages that are far below the standards over here.
Hendrik, that goes back to your question before about if we become EU citizens, what duties and what rights will we have?
Yeah.
It makes the Charter of Fundamental Rights, the CFR, legally binding. And this is your right. You'll have workers' rights, but it'll be defined by the European Court of Justice. And they'll say you don't have the right to protest people coming here and getting taken advantage of, which is bad for national workers and settled immigrants.
I mean, that would create a totally different scenario. And again, we're beginning to see this now, already happening. And I mean, it would just create an even worse economic situation. I wonder what the goal is from those who are implementing these rules and laws. And I wonder what they're thinking about, because ultimately, I went into this a little bit with Martha here just a couple of days ago. And what I'm seeing is that this goes back to the idea of almost like distribution of wealth. They're trying to level out the economic situation for all the countries within the EU, but that will have a totally destabilizing effect in these countries, because as we know, many of the northern countries, Scandinavian countries, and then of course including Germany, Holland, and I would say Ireland in that as well, we are the countries, so to speak, that are paying for this, and we are the ones who primarily are going to suffer for this, while countries as Spain and a lot of the eastern countries as well are going to, economically speaking, benefit hugely from joining and having these implementations within the EU.
Yeah, well, if you listen to the EU politicians, bureaucrats, they keep on saying that they need the EU to compete with the labor from China, right? Huh. But at the same time, they made laws that accept the Chinese goods coming in, which the EU does not need. So these are just luxury goods to come in. They make laws that allow that to come in, and they give subsidies to companies as well if they want to go offshore to China. So they're giving tax money for that. And they also make laws where you can import fish from China, and then it could land in Scotland. And then the company in Scotland can legally put a label on that saying packaged in Scotland, and that goes into the shops, and people think that the fish is from Scotland.
Oh.
So they're making these laws to undermine the EU workers, and then at the same time they're saying we need to compete with China. So they're lowering down the living standards, and there's absolutely no way you can compete with China. China has people in prison working for them.
Well, exactly.
Never mind the wages that they're getting paid.
Exactly, and on top of that, I mean, just listen to connection to the environmental question. That's just total hypocrisy, because again, I mean, they're talking about going green and environmental issues and so forth, but again, huge transportations with shipping and stuff over from China. That's detrimental to the environment, considering all the transportation that is taking place back and forth, and it's just ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, well, with these laws and the new carbon laws, the hot gas laws, we will go green. Everybody will go green. Yeah, we'll get sick. That's what you go free when you get there. Yeah. But the whole thing is a con. Like, at the moment, the EU already operates where they talk to NGOs, which are non-governmental organizations. Now, a non-governmental organization can be anything, can be called anything. You know, normally the top NGOs have bankers in them, we have military generals in them, we have ex-politicians in them, we have corporate lobbyists in them. And that's a non-governmental organization. And a fancy name, you give a fancy name like the Royal Institute of International Affairs or the European Council on Foreign Relations.
Yes.
Or the World Health Organization or even the club, you know, the Club of Rome. Right? The fancier name, the better. So they're non-governmental, you know, but really they are. They're part of the establishment, the big ones, the ones that the government listens to. So yes. They make recommendations for laws, and then the EU implements those laws, and we have to follow those laws. And then the EU will say, well, that's democracy, because we're listening to people. They're non-governmental.
Yes.
That's the people. You know, but if you and I try and put an NGO together, they won't listen to us. They only listen to banks, military generals, NGOs. So that's the practice at the moment, right? But if anybody wants to be clear on it, it says it in the Lisbon Treaty. You can go open up the Lisbon Treaty. It's on the Wise Up Journal. It's linking to Jens Peter Bonde, an MEP, Danish MEP. He put it all together so you can actually read it. You can go to Wise Up Journal, you can click on that on the homepage, and you can search for Article 21, and it tells you that the EU is going to work with NGOs
in
making laws and policies. So, and that's the con. That's the con of democracies. And then that is the current system. And that's the way all governments work at the moment. But it just says it there in black and white if people want to see it.
Okay, very good. We're going to link that up as well from Hans-Peter Bunder from your website. But do you guys know anything about the potential emergence of a EU police force? I've heard a little bit about this in the background, so to speak. Germany was pushing it a while back and so forth. But do you guys think that that's a possibility that we could, for instance, have a, well, let's say in Sweden we have a Polish police force almost, or they switch around this in different ways. It becomes more of a European or international style police force where we all know the reasons for them to do that. Because again, if you're in a country where you not have your roots, so to speak, it's more easier to treat the population there in a different way. But have you guys any more information about that? Have you been studying that at all?
Well, you don't have to speculate about the coming EU police force because it's already here. It's in a small form here. It's called Eurolux, and at the moment they're in Serbia.
Yes.
You know, and they're having trouble over there. People are rioting against the EU police. And it's small at the moment. They take a few policemen from Poland, a few policemen from Spain, and you get them to work together on riot situations to work against civilians. But now in the Lisbon Treaty, Article 42.3, it clearly says civilian and military capabilities must be made available to the EU. So civilian would be the police forces.
Yes.
So it's right there in the Lisbon Treaty, yeah. So they can expand it now if you pass the Lisbon Treaty. But it is already there. And we have the Euro Corps as well, which is a little European army. And the European Union head thought it was fitting that this year in 2009 that they'll let the Euro Corps open up the ceremony to the European Parliament. And you can get a video of that if you look at it on YouTube. You can see these military gear, carrying a big giant flag of the EU, walking up, and they're raising the EU flag. And if you look at all the other, the state flags, they're small.
Yes.
Right? And this EU flag is double the size.
Yes.
And the thing about this Lisbon Treaty is massive, and people don't realize it because it is similar to when the United States of America was set up, because you had the state of Texas, which was independent. You had all these independent states, and they call us states now, the Irish state. Swedish state.
Yes.
This constitution makes the EU superior and creates a totally different EU. Federal EU, it has its own president, and it says that that president was going to be representing the EU in the UN, and it has its own legal personality. Or we're not going to get to vote for this president. In America, they can vote for a public president. We won't get to vote. So this is as big as the creation of the United States of America. as big as that, and people don't realize that.
That's right, exactly. And again, we hear nothing about it. That it's just amazing to me how the ratification of some of the national parliaments, how they just ran through the Lisbon Treaty, and virtually no mentioning of it in the mainstream media, nothing on television, a few little bit here and there in print, of course, some of the more investigative papers and so forth, at least up here in Sweden. But at least we're getting a little bit of more exposure to the Lisbon Treaty because of the situation in Ireland. So we are, you know, definitely grateful for that, because again, if we get a no vote here again now, I think that it's going to even be bigger next time, and better to the benefit of us, so to speak, who are interested in getting a no. What do you guys think about that? Do you think that it'll be good to get a no vote in terms of the continued exposure for the arguments of the no side here, so to speak?
Well, I think if there's another no vote, I don't think they'll try the Treaty of Lisbon again. I don't think they'll go for three times. I think that if it's a no vote, they'll probably try and wait for 2-3 years, rejig a few teams in it, and try and like call it the Marseille Treaty or something, you know, or the Rome Treaty, whatever, well, you have one, something like that.
Yeah.
But I think if it is a no vote, I don't think they'll try it a third time or push it. I think they'll go back, take some restock, rejig it like they did after the failed constitution, Holland and France, and try and claim that they're talking about the Croatian accession treaty maybe next year. So they might try and rejig it or change the name so people will think it's a different treaty.
Yeah.
It is an awful.
But it's amazing, yeah, like you're saying, that the other European citizens are not being told about it. And in Ireland, if Ireland didn't have that in our constitution where we were required to ask us if we're going to become a part of a brand new United States of Europe, we really didn't have something in there that made us vote, we wouldn't know about it either.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be told about it.
That's
and
right.
If we vote yes and you get self-amending treaties, we're not going to be told about when they amend it. We won't have a clue.
You're kidding?
Yeah. We won't, yeah.
Sheesh.
Of course. We won't know, because they can do it themselves. They won't have to ask us and they won't tell us.
There you go.
Either it's only a small number of people who are, they'll go to the trouble of finding it, will know.
Yeah.
The rest of the public won't know.
I've heard the Swedish Prime Minister and the head of the presidency for the EU right now mentioned that obviously they are looking for a quick, as he called it, a quick move over to the Lisbon Treaty if it's ratified, and they have different things set up to move fast, as they call it. He said, though, that if it is a no vote, that they're looking to go back to the Treaty of Nice in some way, trying to, develop that more, just as you kind of suggested here. So we obviously keep an eye on this and see what happens. We obviously hope for a no. But if we talk about more practical, I guess, solutions in terms of the EU as a whole, what is the solutions as you guys see it here? How do we get the word out, and what's the ultimate way of getting out of this? Is it for nations to go out of the EU, or is that something that is going to be very difficult at this point? How are things from your point of view?
Well, yeah, the EU is definitely undemocratic. It's not allowing other people of the EU to vote. So, like, Northern Ireland is not allowed to vote, and Ireland is re-voting twice, and then they don't want the people to vote for an EU president. So if there's anybody out there that's still in doubt that the EU is democratic, well, you better wise up now. Well, what can you do? If you vote no, unfortunately, Ireland will not be kicked out of the EU.
That's...
They gave us 60 billion euro, but the fishermen trade union said that we've actually lost 200 billion euro because they allowed the other species to come in and fish more than Irish fishermen.
No.
And we've lost 200 billion. They gave us 60 billion, we lost 200 billion. That was a con. That was a con deal. And also, if you take the processing of those fish, of those 200 billion fish, if they're to be processed as well in Ireland, you're talking about creating jobs for that as well. And you're probably talking about 600 billion lost, you know? So unfortunately, if you vote no, we won't be kicked out. And that's the only way I can see it, if countries will get out of it. And Sir Goldsmith was his name. He was a billionaire And he in 1994, he was at the U.S. Senate, and he talked about alternatives. He talked about the system that we have now, where we're linking in with countries that have a lower living standard and lower wages.
Yeah.
Is it going to destroy the local nation linking in? You're going to destroy that. In fact, you said that's like playing cards on the Titanic, trying to make money on the Titanic. What you do is the countries can individually decide what other nations to trade with, and you can trade with countries that are, have the same similar economy as you and the same living standards as you. You don't go to a country that they're getting paid 2% of what you get paid here. It's going to destroy you. You can't make a... He was a billionaire. He says he doesn't want to make a profit while destroying jobs locally and destroying the country locally, because you'll end up not making a profit. You end up being a serf to,
yes,
to the elite controlling the system.
Yes. Major, major problem, obviously. And what about if we touch upon the area of potential vote fraud? Is it going to be... Do you guys know if it's going to be a paper ballots? Is it going to be anything electronic? Who's doing the counting? Is there someone checking out and confirming the numbers? Do you guys know anything about this?
Well, no. A few years ago, the government tried to bring in certain machine voting, but the Irish public didn't accept it. And at the moment, they're paying, like, it's costing 50 or 60 million to store them voting machines. I think last year they decided to stop storing them and get rid of them. But we use paper ballot, and I think that is the best way. But
yeah,
I know from last year, I think it was a few questions, like, you know, a special ballot box at the RDS was brought in. A lot of people are asking questions about why that was brought in. Apparently there were special votes that were allowed, but there is people who watch the votes. Different political parties are allowed to watch them, and you can get a card to attend the event at the day and do the tallies and check that the counters aren't moving any votes around.
Yeah, we'll be busy doing that ourselves on the day. We've applied to do that.
Oh, okay. That's excellent.
Day, yeah.
Fantastic. And I mean, that will be something that I guess takes place after it is, you know, it's known if it is a yes and a no, of course. But we'll definitely have to see what happens there. And is there anything else that you guys would like to mention here now, you know, either to the Irish people or the rest of the European audience that are tuning in, either information-wise about why they should vote no, or anything else that you can think of at this point?
Well, I think the main reason to vote no is simple. You can see, like, almost every day, even in the tactics the media use, the government use, whether it's the EU Commission or Irish politicians, they have one agenda. They're going to stick to this agenda. The agenda is not in the interest of working class, middle class, or anybody that cares for a free and open society and democracy. And rather than, like, a political union, we could just have simple trade agreements with nations that are similar, you know.
Yes.
So the French and the Dutch voted no, which is the EU constitution, which is 95% the same. We voted no last year. They said we'll have to vote again. So clearly the EU is, as they claim, working for the people. They're working for themselves and the big lobbyist groups who will benefit from more controls and regulations over the population.
Yeah, the EU, there are several articles in the Lisbon Treaty about the EU creating a defence policy. And, you know, America has a defence policy. America's defence policy is, let's fight them over there instead of fighting them over here. That's their defence policy, is attacking countries that never attack you. So the best defence is offence. So, yeah, you'll read that if you go through the Lisbon Treaty. And Article 26.4 says that their security defence policy can use national and union resources. So they can come in and take up any national resource they want. And it also, because it says that it can use union resources, it means now that the union legally can build up its own resource, and that will be the union's resources itself. So it won't be the national resources. And that also includes access to the union's resources, but the fund itself. And, yeah, like, the last thing you want to do is this union spreading this kind of democracy to other parts of the world.
Yes.
So there are even, there's NGOs, EU NGOs there with ex-bureaucrats from the EU in there advocating that we go into North Africa and accept these countries in and spread this kind of democracy over there. And you definitely don't want the EU defense policy spreading democracy the same way the US defense policy spreads democracy by going into Iraq and killing a million citizens, saying, here's your democracy, accept or we'll kill you.
Oh, God. Well, it's called a New World Order, and we say no, and I absolutely encourage everyone to get informed about the Lisbon Treaty and to vote no on it. Anthony and Derek's website is wiseupjournal.com. Go there, take a look at the film End of Nations, and of course the new video interview with Jim Corr as well. Keep up the good work, guys. And one final thing then, how can people, our listeners, support you guys? Do you encourage people to go and continue on making donations to the Sovereign Independent, or is there anything else they can do as well to support you specifically?
Yeah, we encourage people to go and send donations to the Sovereign Independent. We would absolutely love it if anybody listening, if they can use a camera, say where you're from and say why you want Ireland to vote no, and maybe even thank us for voting no last time, and explain that in your country you're not allowed to vote and you don't even know, the media isn't even telling the people. That would be amazing if you could do that, and we'd play that in the streets to the Irish public before they vote.
Okay, there you have it. Brilliant. Thanks again, guys. Keep up the great work, and I hope we see you over in Ireland then.
Yes, definitely. We'll see you here on the day.
Yeah. Thanks, Emmerich.
Thank you for listening. Spread the word, spread this program, and also, of course, listen to our programs with MEP Marta Andreasen, MEP Nigel Farage, Simon Murphy, Paul Flynn, and David Icke, specifically about the EU and the upcoming Lisbon Treaty. Hope to see you over in Ireland. We'll talk more soon. Bye-bye.